Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. Hear from Dalton Wasserman, a Pro Football Focus, about 15 minutes. I talked to him during the combine. So a lot of reaction to everything going on. And this is, we're in that spot, right? This is the thing about the combine. The combine works for players that need the spotlight on them. It doesn't matter for, I mean, everybody made a big deal. Remember when Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't do a thing at the combine? Still got drafted high. Now, you can say whatever you want about his career so far, but a lot of it is bad offense, bad quarterback, dysfunctional franchise, all of those things. But, you know, stars don't need to work out at the combine. Who cares? If you're fast, you're fast. I mean, granted, if you think you could run a really fast 40 and you've trained for it, guys will train for that. All right. David Bailey runs out 4.51, and everybody's like, oh my God, he maybe jumped up a couple of spots. Probably won't be there for the Commanders, and that sucks. But, you know, you're not going to be finding a quarterback that you're going to draft in the first round this year. You know, the top quarterbacks are going to have a pro day, and you're going to look at game film, and you're going to look at what they did over their entire football career. The quarterback market's bad this offseason. So if you need a quarterback, you ain't looking in the first round of the draft this year. You're probably not even looking in free agency unless you want to spend $30 million on Malik Willis, which, I mean, look, we've obviously seen quarterbacks get away from the team that drafted them, go and, you know, spend a couple of seasons in another organization as a backup, learn and come back and have great careers, like a Baker Mayfield or a Sam Darnold. It's starting to look like maybe before he got hurt, Daniel Jones was in that category too. And that might be Malik Willis. We saw a little bit with him in Green Bay. We started to see these flashes, but the market they're talking about right now for Malik Willis could be upwards of $30 million a year. $30 million a year for this kid. Look, good for him if he gets it. I mean, more power to him. But, I mean, that's what we're looking at right now. And that just shows you, again, where the quarterback position has gotten to, not just in the NFL in the past, but this offseason. That's a lot. Now, the market is said to be around the 3 for 100 overall that Sam Darnold got. And I get it. It's not all guaranteed, and it's going to look a little different when the contract finally shakes out, and maybe it's worth it. But that's a lot for a guy that doesn't have much NFL experience. And, you know, we get so caught up in the need to find a franchise quarterback when it ends up, you force it a lot. We see it get forced a lot in the NFL. And sometimes it's the draft, right? Anthony Richardson goes 4 overall to the Colts. Was not ready to start. Should not have started the first year, if not 2 years of his career. Barely started in high school. Barely started in college. Didn't work out with the Colts. He doesn't win the starting job. Daniel Jones does, and now he's going to get traded. I mean, look, we have this idea that all these young quarterbacks just should start right away. Sometimes they're just not ready. I understand that you have these rookie scale contracts, and you got players that you look at and go, you know, he could be good. But if we can get him out there now and maybe surround him with some other talent and just give it a year or two, and we're paying him on that rookie scale contract versus $50 million a year that we think he could earn, all we can build ourselves a winner. Because, yes, it's happened a couple of times. It happened with the Chiefs. It happened with Russell Wilson in Seattle years ago. And you have these moments where those quarterbacks win, but it doesn't mean it's going to work every time. I remember years ago, it's like we see this so much where it's one team does it a certain way, so everybody thinks they can do the exact same thing. I mean, I can remember at the peak of the Golden State Warriors era, jumping to the NBA here, and everybody wanted to be the Warriors then. Everybody's got to be a three-point shooter. Everybody, let's stretch the floor. And the Wizards were trying to do that with like John Wall, and it's like, John Wall's not a three-point shooter like that. Why are we doing this? Let him play his game. Let him get in the mid-range. Let him get to the basket. Just stop having him shoot 7-8 threes a game. He's not a three-point shooter. It's the same thing where not every quarterback is ready to start right away. And let's also not forget that Patrick Mahomes, when he won that MVP in a Super Bowl in his first year as a starter, he also was on a team in Kansas City that traded up to get him that was a playoff team the year before and had Alex Smith starting, was a very capable starter that he also spent time learning from that first year. So every situation is very different. Anthony Richardson should not have been starting, should not have been drafted number 4 overall, and was a complete waste of years with an Indianapolis Colts team that was not ready to develop him and had pressure to start him right away. And I know a lot of this comes from owners. I get that. But there needs to be an understanding in this league that as much as these quarterbacks are valued, as much as the position is so important, it doesn't matter if you want to start them sooner and get more games out of them and get them experience on the field potentially under that you know, 4 years and then the 5 year option and hope that you can build the team around him. If they don't develop under that rookie contract that's really cheap for quarterbacks, and they don't even make it to a second contract with you, it was all a waste of time. Who cares? Who cares? Because in the end, they could have started Anthony Richardson after a year, given him a chance. Maybe he gets more of an opportunity. Maybe he is a little bit more confident, right? Because that's the thing, too. These are young kids that are human. And when the game is sped up a lot more in the NFL, and they're used to having a level of success that does not translate right away to the NFL, doubt starts to creep in. They are human. That is, it is going to happen. Anthony Richardson is not even going to make it to the end of his rookie contract with the Colts. So in the end, you're not getting the full 5 years out of him under that contract. So maybe you would have been better off just not playing him the first year because it's still going to be a short amount of time. Like, you see what I'm saying? You're like, it just, the logic doesn't make sense with this. We rush these kids out so quickly because fans are chanting for him because they don't like the bridge quarterback that's in front of them. And owners just sit back in their, you know, in their big offices going, hey, start the kid. Do you know anything about football, sir, or do you know business? Stick to business. And this is what happens. Look, I can't tell you whether Anthony Richardson, no matter who he was drafted by, could ever be or will ever be a franchise quarterback. Right now, from what I've seen, hell no. Is he the ultimate combine pro day, go out there and have flashy clips that go all over social media, like throwing a football all the way to the ceiling of a field house and hitting the ceiling? Yeah. We've seen that time and time again. Remember Zach Wilson's workouts? Oh, everybody loved him. Oh, man, the throws he was making on the run. Zach Wilson's going to be a star. Oh, my God, that's not going to work out. Do you remember Kyle Bowler? I know Ravens fans do. Remember that? Go look, if you haven't seen it, go look up the old video of Kyle Bowler throwing from his knees at the 50-yard line on a football field through the uprights. The arm strength. Oh, man. Nope. Didn't work. The physical gifts are there for quarterbacks, right? Jay Cutler syndrome. Always said there were coaches that always thought they could get the most out of Jay Cutler. And sometimes, they just don't even care. Jay Cutler didn't care. Football came natural to him. I mean, he was a starting quarterback. Anthony Richardson's not even a starter, but just because a quarterback has physical gifts doesn't mean that they're fundamentally ready to play in the NFL. And that's okay. Like, we have this notion that everybody that's a first-round pick, just start them right away. This is a good year in the NFL right now, honestly, to build a defense and a run game. If you need a quarterback right now this offseason, don't push it. Don't spend your money on a what if. Wait. Go out there and sign Kirk Cousins for a year. I know he's 38, but he's a capable bridge quarterback at this point. Unless you're trading for Kyler or Tua and the Dolphins and Cardinals are going to pay a majority of those contracts, then I'd argue, okay, maybe. But if you got to take on a bunch of that money, you don't want that. You don't want a lot of these other random backups that are out there. I mean, you're better off going out and getting one of these running backs that's 25, 26 years old even, or drafting a couple and building up your defense and going by more of the model of what Seattle did. And I'd say New England, but I mean, Drake May was a runner-up for MVP for the regular season. So it's not like they didn't have great quarterback play, but in the playoffs they didn't. They still went to a Super Bowl because they had a great defense. So honestly, as opposed to a team that's actually sitting there and just you're trying, like, we need a quarterback. We've got to find somebody this year. Do you? Like, do you really have to? Do you have to force it if it's a one? I mean, you're going to have somebody play the position. But you're better off with a short-term bridge quarterback commitment this offseason than going out there and trying to force it with somebody that you don't know for sure could be a starter at all. Look, Anthony Richardson needs to go somewhere to be a backup, and that's it. Go and learn. Go the route of Baker Mayfield. Go the route of Sam Darnold. Go the route of Mac Jones right now. Mac Jones is going to spend another year as a backup for the 49ers unless they trade him, which it looks like they're not going to, and I wouldn't. He was great when Brock Purdy was hurt. Sometimes you have to take a step back to take a bigger step forward. It's learning. It's growing. I mean, when you have very little experience, go look at look at Jaden Daniels' quarterback class that was drafted with him, right? Six quarterbacks, first 12 picks. They all have experience in college. All had a ton of experience. You got Jaden going to an NFC Championship game. You got Drake May going to a Super Bowl. You've got Caleb Williams winning a playoff game. You got Bo Nix going to an AFC Championship game. I know he got hurt and didn't play in that game, but it was like the end of the game. He helped get them there in the divisional round. So, I mean, yes, there have been some injuries. Yes, there's questions about J.J. McCarthy certainly staying healthy. We really haven't seen much from him. And Michael Penix Jr., same thing. But again, those guys were all drafted in the first round, and we have at least seen moments in a very small sample size of what they can do. And it's a lot of experience in college coming from every single one of them. Anthony Richardson didn't have that. Malik Willis didn't have a lot of that either. Sometimes you got to sit back, you got to learn. That's why some of these guys like Dante Moore, going back another year, getting $5 million to go play. I mean, okay. Trinidad Chambliss was like, I want to play forever. He's going the Van Wilder route. There's a reference for you. Go and just play in his sixth year. Van Wilder was 7 years in college, though. So, yeah, I mean, we rush so many of these quarterbacks and just think they're instantly going to get there. We don't develop anymore. There's no development of quarterbacks anymore. You're better off getting drafted later in the first round and sitting. Who cares if you're drafted fifth overall? I know you lose some money initially, but it can change. It can absolutely change as time goes on. So, all right, we got another hour coming up. If you're on 980, Georgetown basketball is going to be coming up next. If you're on The Fan, stick here. A lot more coming up. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the team. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Matt Nick Ashew on all the socials. A lot of good combine performances. Then, of course, there was Aaron Glenn who fell asleep on camera. And I guarantee there was a whole group of producers and directors behind the scenes on that broadcast just waiting to see him doze off. Like, wait. Oh, nope, he's not there yet. Wait. Nope. Get the camera on him. Wait. Oh, there he is. He's asleep. Go. I mean, it had happened and you knew it's going to be. That will be the meme of the NFL season every time the Jets lose, which will be a lot. Aaron Glenn falling asleep at the combine. Fair or not, because he probably, those are long days. Doesn't matter. Camera catches you, and that's the perception, and that's what he's got to deal with. A lot, though, that involves, obviously, potential draft picks for the Commanders at number 7. I talked to Pro Football Focus's Dalton Wasserman during the combine. Here's what he said. Dalton Wasserman jumps on with us now, Pro Football Focus, and I'm looking at your mock draft now at Pro Football Focus, Dalton. And you have Sonny Styles, the linebacker out of Ohio State, going to the Commanders. Now, I know, obviously, things change. Talk to different people. We hear different things. But as we sit right now, why Sonny Styles to the Commanders when, in the end, let's be honest, Dalton, the Commanders need like a million things defensively?
Yeah, I think the one thing they need defensively is leaders, right? And I know, you know, Bobby Wagner is a free agent. We'll see if he's coming back. And if he doesn't come back for any reason and he wants to go to maybe another contender, then they need a leader of that defense in the middle of it next to Frankie Louvu there at linebacker. And Sonny Styles, as we saw today, just measured out as an absolute freak. The athleticism is crazy. I mean, you just don't see many players like him. And as a former safety, being able to move down and play linebacker, he was excellent for Ohio State, right? So I think he would be an outstanding pick. And I think there's multiple guys within that top 10 range who would make good picks for the Commanders, but they need impact players and leaders. If it's him, if it's maybe a Caleb Downs at safety, I think that would make a lot of sense, right? If they feel like they want to take the best defensive lineman available, there's needs at all three levels. I think there's a lot of good picks they could make there at 7.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of names on here. Right now you have David Bailey going to the Titans at 4. As Anthony just mentioned, he just ran a 4.45. So there we go. That teams are going to certainly love that, which may have him jump up boards and maybe stay there at 4. I mean, I would love to see David Bailey fall to 7 and the Commanders draft him. When you look at David Bailey specifically, how does his game, like what makes him somebody that can translate to being an elite edge rusher in the NFL?
I think it's exactly what you're seeing today. It's the fact that even on his tape, he's so explosive. His first step is unbelievable off the line of scrimmage, and he's just a really darn good athlete, right? You know, I think the fit for me with Tennessee there is just the fact that Robert Saleh loves those explosive defensive ends that can get after the quarterback in 2.5 seconds, right? I think when you talk about a guy who is a true, well, maybe the best pressure generator in this draft off the edge, man, David Bailey for the last 2 years led the nation in PFF pass rush grade once at Stanford and then this year at Texas Tech. He's just that guy. If you need to juice up your pass rush, he's the guy that you're going to want more than anybody. Obviously, there's some questions, maybe a little bit about his size, but weighing in at 250 plus isn't bad. And, you know, his ability in run defense, which he got better with this year, but there may not be another more explosive edge rusher in this draft than Bailey.
By the way, a 4.51 40. Thank you, Anthony, for correcting me. I swear I thought you said 4.45. 4.51 still great, but 4.51 still for David Bailey running the 40. So Reuben Bain, a lot of the conversation to Dalton was, you know, his arm length and wingspan. And again, we're breaking down all of these little things, and teams want to find every edge they can to either rule out somebody that you're going to draft or absolutely guarantee in their minds that this guy is going to work out. It's every little detail that helps hopefully give an edge one way or the other. When you look at Reuben Bain, we did find out shorter arm length. That can be a thing. Micah Parsons, though, not the longest arms, and he's found his way certainly to succeed in the NFL. Does that concern you at all with Reuben Bain, or do you see more than enough intangibles that it shouldn't be a problem?
It concerns me less with him than it would for most players because he's so well taught, right, and he understands how to use it. And we saw 3 years of elite production of him at Miami, and let's remember now, he had one of the best defensive ends coaches you could possibly have down there, and Dolphins legend Jason Taylor as well. So he's been working around it, and I love his versatility too because, you know, there's times where he would reduce down inside, play over the tackle as a five technique, play in the C-gap and, you know, on the strong side and run defense, and he was well able to handle himself. So, you know, he also a little bit less than Miami had him listed at, but he's always found a way to dominate, and he's so strong, especially in his lower body, that I don't really question his strength and his ability to play one-on-one. It's just a matter of him continuing to improve his technique and know how to win with the shorter arms that he has.
All right, so talking to Dalton Wasserman, Pro Football Focus, Nick Ashew and the Team 980. Quarterback is always a polarizing position, as we know, in teams' reach, and we've watched, obviously, for the Commanders and Jaden Daniels in that draft class, six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks, and it looks like right now, and I look into your mock draft, obviously, with Fernando Mendoza going number one overall, is there any chance that you could see another quarterback besides Fernando Mendoza jumping into this first round at all, or is this going to be one of those, it's probably him and nobody else? Because I'm looking through, and I don't see anybody else here in the first round of your mock draft at Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that a second one gets taken, and that's Ty Simpson, right? And I have him going, I think in that mock, I have him going 34 to the Cardinals just outside the first round. It's just going to depend on certain teams' opinions of him, right? I think, you know, you start the conversation, I think, with Miami picking in the early teens. If they feel like very high on Simpson, I know they're probably going to make a run at Malik Willis with the Packers connections there. But, you know, if they don't get him, then I think you start that conversation with Miami. The Rams would definitely be a conversation with those two first-round picks. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, the New York Jets would be another one. Now, the question for me, I would prefer Simpson go somewhere where he can sit for a year behind a veteran. I think the Steelers and the Rams are two situations that stick out to me that if they like him enough, they could take him in the first round and sit him behind an Aaron Rodgers or a Matt Stafford and just let him clean up some of the fundamentals, especially in his footwork and against pressure in his game. So it is entirely possible that Simpson goes in the first round, but I don't see anybody else beyond that.
See, I'm glad you said that, Dalton, because, you know, we live in this world now where obviously when you have these rookie-scale contracts for quarterbacks, too, you want to get them out there quickly and maximize that lack of financial burden and build around them and do all these things. But some guys just aren't necessarily ready for that. And I think that's a great point with Ty Simpson, is that there's maybe an opportunity there where a year or two he's ready, but not necessarily right off the bat. Fernando Mendoza, drafted number one overall. When you look at him, do you see somebody that starts week one? Do you see somebody that maybe gets an opportunity to sit, even like the Patriots did for the first few weeks of the season with Drake May?
It's an interesting situation because the Raiders general manager, John Spytek, mentioned that he doesn't necessarily love, you know, rookies starting right away, especially if you don't have your team built properly. But he's going to spend the rest of his offseason fixing up the offensive line and trying to build this defense as well. So the pressure is off Mendoza, and he doesn't feel like he has to go in there and carry that team. But I expect him to start week one. I don't think, you know, I think there might be some sort of competition and a veteran brought in there just to make sure, you know, he has to compete for the job and make sure he's really ready to take it, but I would fully expect him to start week one and get that development going. I think the Raiders, they just have to build it right around him. And I think, look, eventually Mendoza has top 10 quarterback potential in the NFL if you build it the right way. There's some nice pieces there. You talk about Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers. Colton Miller, when he's healthy at left tackle, is an elite player as well. They got to fill in some pieces on offense and basically completely rebuild that defense. But the potential is all there, and I would expect him to be their week one starter.
Yeah, you led me to exactly what I was going to ask you next, Dalton. Fernando Mendoza, you say potential, and again, obviously potential is an open word and there's a lot of things that can go either direction here, but what is it about Fernando Mendoza that you see, if the right pieces are around him in place, that gives him the chance to be a very, very good quarterback in the NFL?
definitely has the right frame, definitely has at least an above average arm, and he got stronger this year, definitely put some weight on in his lower body this year, and his arm got stronger. He's tough. He's a leader. He's willing to challenge those tight window throws, especially you saw that down the stretch this season, willing to challenge more tight window one-on-one throws than we were used to seeing even in his first 2.5 years starting. So I just think he's got a little bit of everything. He's very sound in his footwork, and you can see year to year he's improved that, really did a nice job of improving his fundamentals this year at Indiana. Obviously, I think there's still even a ways to go in his development before being a top guy, right? Getting to the second and third read and really figuring out how to improvise at times without taking hits. But he's definitely, I think, projects to be a very solid starter in the league. You know, I think as far as high-end potential, I think you're talking about, you know, when Kirk Cousins was in his prime and he was something like the eighth best QB in the league, or what we've seen a lot out of guys like Dak Prescott and Jared Goff. I think Mendoza, within maybe 3 to 4 years, can get to that level.
Talking to Dalton Wasserman of Pro Football Focus and his mock draft that he put out with, you know, obviously the Commanders, Sonny Styles going number 7 overall in that draft. But there's always, Dalton, one or two players that we see just jump. Is there anybody that you're looking at now that you could see? Maybe they're a fringe first to maybe early second round pick, besides obviously Ty Simpson. We'll put him aside because you mentioned him already. But is there anybody else that you look at and you say, you know what, he's got the pieces where we're going to see teams start to really get excited about this guy, and you could see him rising up draft boards?
I think you're probably seeing it happen on Twitter right now with these defensive linemen working out. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle from Florida, Caleb Banks, is having an all-time combine at 6'6" and 327 pounds. And, you know, there's some people who have said, man, this guy's kind of built like Chris Jones, right? But he only played 3 games this year at Florida, dealt with some injuries. But the last couple of years before that, one of the best interior pass rushers in the country. If you see that sort of potential in him, especially in a draft class where the talent is so even, right? We don't see a whole lot of blue guys, and beyond maybe the first 5 or 6 players, you're really banking possibly on potential. I think Caleb Banks, with this combine that he's having right now, he might have vaulted himself into the top 15 conversation after a lot of question marks really heading into the Senior Bowl, and he had a pretty good week there. Now with this combine performance, you're going to see top 15 to 20 talk with him.
You know, I'll tell you what, looking at your mock draft too, Dalton, I see a lot of wide receivers going in the first round. This feels like a historic draft for wide receivers too.
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily, say, a Julio Jones or a Jamar Chase type of prospect, but to me, wide receiver is probably the best position group on the offensive side of the ball in this draft. It's very deep, right? You have 3 guys in Jordan Tyson and Carnell Tate and Mekhi Lemon. They're considered to be the 3 best, but then you see some other guys pop up. Denzel Boston from Washington, Omar Cooper, and even Elijah Surratt from Indiana. You're going to see a lot of receivers go in the top 50, go in the top 100. If you need depth, and even, you know, even on day 2, if you're looking for guys who can be your second or third option in your passing game, there's plenty of those to work with. I think you're going to see wide receiver really be the position selected the most and the highest, the combination of talent there of all the offensive position groups.
Now, you have Jeremiah Love going number 9 to the Chiefs. And we know running back is certainly it's a touchy subject with people. His first round, and I always like to point out, occasionally it does work out for Jahmyr Gibbs and a Bijan Robinson, but that's not always the case. I know, I'll tell you this, a lot of people in D.C. love Jeremiah Love and would love to see him in burgundy and gold. But again, a lot of needs, especially defensively. Makes sense in Kansas City. By the way, really weird to see Kansas City drafting that high. We're, I think nobody's really used to that at this point, Dalton. But when you look at Jeremiah Love, is that somebody that if he went to Kansas City is, I mean, major factor right away, the way some of these running backs just burst onto the scene in the NFL the way they do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously the offensive line for any team drafting a running back that high, as we saw with the Raiders and even the Chargers last year, the offensive line's always a variable, but Jeremiah Love is the one true impact, instant plus starter at running back in this class, right? It's not a deep class at running back like it was last year. A lot more of late day 2, early day 3 talents to me, but Jeremiah Love stands head and shoulders above those guys, and it's the home run speed, right? You talk about a team like the Chiefs or even the New Orleans Saints at 8, I think you make even a good point about the Commanders. Look, obviously they have a lot of needs on defense, but if they feel like Love and Jaden Daniels in the backfield is the best route to go, I get it. He's so explosive. I was there in person when he had a 98-yard touchdown run against Indiana. The kid can absolutely fly, and he's not one of those undersized guys, right? He's got very good size to him. He runs through contact. He's hurdling people left and right. He's got everything you could ask for in a back, and it's that explosive ability, right? When you talk about good rushing offenses now, it's not just about mauling you physically, which, yes, anybody, every offense offensive coordinator wants to do, but the fact that he can turn 5 and 10 yard gains into 40s and 60s and even 90 yard runs, that's really the ability you're talking about with Jeremiah Love. He's a home run hitter that can flip the field on any play.
Now, Dalton, I know this is going to be a very open-ended question, so forgive me, but I have to throw it out there anyway. What teams do you look at as potentially trading up or down in this draft?
Trading up it's tough to figure out right now because you have to, you know, you kind of think to yourself, okay, who is trading up for what in a draft class that, again, isn't considered to have a ton of blue chip talent? You think about the Rams, though, if they wanted to get into the top 10, they're certainly armed to do so. I think about the Pittsburgh Steelers, if they feel like they want to get into Ty Simpson range and they have a, you know, they have a hunch that maybe the Jets at 16 or somebody else would try to do it. They've got some extra capital. And I think a sneaky team in the back end, if they're looking for a real impact defensive player, especially a trench player, I think New England's sitting there at 31. I believe they're projected right now to have 11 total picks. They might jump up a handful of spots from 31 to try to fill some needs in the trenches. Those are three teams I'm looking at.
All right, Dalton Wasserman, Pro Football Focus, has Sonny Styles going to the Commanders at number 7 as of right now, but we all know Dalton is busy and a lot of things can change. Really appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on with us.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
And as that was going on, Jeremiah Love just ran a 4.37 and a 4.36 40. So, it's now the running back's turn today. Listen, the 40's fun, it's great, but, you know, it only dictates so much when this is all said and done. Though I do look forward to watching the offensive linemen run the 40. Who doesn't? Who doesn't want to watch fat guys run in their underwear? It's football, and people still want to watch it. Has it turned into maybe the Pro Bowl games a little bit? Sure! But it's football, and we'll take it, especially because March Madness isn't even here yet. I'm Nick Ashew. I'm here. I'm coming back. You're on The Fan. Say what you want about Kirk Cousins, but damn, is he a smart businessman. Nick Ashew on The Fan. So he's going to get released. That news came out a few days ago. That's not new. But this just got sent to me, and I need to speak this into words here because it's putting things into probably the best perspective of Kirk Cousins' career that I have ever seen. So Kirk Cousins over his entire NFL career has so far earned $321 million over that. We know he's going to get released by the Falcons. Kirk Cousins has made the fourth most money in NFL history behind Matt Stafford, $408 million, Aaron Rodgers, $394, Tom Brady, $332, and then Russell Wilson comes in fifth behind Cousins at $316. Those top five all-time earnings leaders in the NFL, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, you had a Super Bowl winner in Matt Stafford, a Super Bowl winner in Aaron Rodgers, a 7-time Super Bowl winner in Tom Brady, a Super Bowl winner in Russell Wilson. Kirk Cousins, one playoff win. Unbelievable. Fully guaranteed contracts every single year, from getting franchised to that big deal with the Vikings to the 100 of the $180 million guaranteed by the Falcons after an Achilles injury, by the way. An absolute hustle by Kirk Cousins. Absolute hustle. And you know what's going to happen? And I keep telling you this, right? This is a quarterback-deprived offseason. Kirk Cousins is going to get another big deal. Now, maybe it's $25 million for one season, but he looked good enough with the Falcons at the end of this past year that there is going to be a team out there that will say, you know what? We're going to give Kirk some love, and we're going to bring him in for a year or two. Probably a one-year deal, one-year guaranteed. Even if it's like a two-year deal or whatever the case is, Kirk Cousins will now turn into a bridge quarterback in the NFL, even if it's for a short period of time. And if you're him, you know, you have to decide where you want to go. If there's multiple options, he's going to want to go to a place that he can win and get an opportunity there to, you know, I mean, succeed for a short period of time. But that's where the question then becomes, when Kirk Cousins gets released, where's he going? Is it the Cardinals or the Dolphins after they move on from Tua and Kyler in some way? Maybe. But after that, I mean, are you talking the Saints? Well, you know, we can rule out the Falcons for Kirk. Not going to be the Panthers or Bucks. I mean, and you start going down the list, and there's not a ton of choices necessarily for someone like Kirk Cousins, unless, which this would be really funny, let me just throw a scenario out there for you. What if he goes back to the Vikings? What if after all that, they go Sam Darnold for a year and then like J.J. McCarthy's not ready? What if they bring Kirk Cousins back to the Vikings? Because there's not a lot of choices out there because it's got to be quick. It's not going to be the Raiders. Fernando Mendoza is going to go number one. They got Geno Smith there. Like that's it. The Colts, maybe if Daniel Jones isn't ready, but then when Daniel Jones is back, is that going to be what they want? The Titans are going to want Cam Ward to start. The Steelers are likely going to have Aaron Rodgers, but let's say Aaron Rodgers retires. Maybe that's a spot for him. He'd be stupid to go to the Jets. Nobody should want to go to the Jets, and he's not going to win there. Wouldn't be the Patriots or Bills. Like, there's not a ton of options necessarily for Kirk Cousins, but he's going to go somewhere. At 38 was still something left in the tank to be a bridge quarterback in an offseason where teams are desperate to try and find somebody that can fill that gap, at least for now. It's Kirk Cousins. Maybe it is the Saints. Maybe he goes down to New Orleans. I mean, this is what it's come down to, but here's the thing. The dude has hustled the NFL. Nobody got a fully guaranteed contract. Kirk Cousins was the first to ever get a multi-year fully guaranteed contract after already getting, obviously, the franchise tag gets you fully guaranteed money and all that. But he has hustled for one Super Bowl win, and that's it. Whew. I'll tell you what. It is the quarterback
position.
One playoff
win, you mean?
One playoff win, yes. What did I say, Super Bowl?
Yes, and I was no.
Thank you. It's been a long day. I did a show starting at 6 a.m. today, so it's a lot. But, but like, honestly, Metal Chris, seriously, how when you think about Kirk Cousins' career, and we go back to his time with, well, then the Redskins, I mean, listen, he broke all types of franchise records. He was the best quarterback that they had over that stretch until we got Jaden Daniels in that rookie season. But for a fourth-round pick for somebody that was the backup plan to RG3, he is made for one hell of a career. And when you really look at it, you have to respect it, don't you? Like, don't you have to sit and respect what he's done? Look, I root for the guy. He's smart. He's a great football mind. He may not be the best quarterback in the NFL, but, like, come on, man. Let's go back to those years when he was starting. What made people mad or where the venom really started was how much he was going to get in free agency and what the market was basically dictating. Remember, they offered him, he got contracts offered. I think Scott McLuhan offered him something that was like $15, $20 million a year early on, trying to look ahead at what the price was going to be, and then they ended up not doing it. But I mean, he is, for someone that's a fourth-round pick, $321 million, and it's going to be more. Like, he's not done yet. He's not done for one playoff win. One. Listen, I respect the hustle. I do. He's smart. He'd probably make a great coach one day.
I mean, is it him, or does he just have a phenomenal agent?
I mean, he's got a great agent, too, but it's the thing with Kirk Cousins is he's at that spot where he does, like, the floor is relatively high with him, right? It's just that the ceiling can vary. You could have these really great Cousins games over the years, and you have games where, right, you always talked about the primetime games or the playoffs, and that's where everything starts to fall apart. But there is a level that you're raising the floor, at least, of your quarterback. And the Vikings saw someone that was sort of the last piece. They had the weapons there. They had the defense. And they won a lot of regular season games. He had a lot of success in the regular season. It's Dak Prescott. Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott, it's a similar career. Making a ton of money. Great regular seasons. But big moments in the playoffs didn't happen. So, hey, if your kids want to play football, teach them how to throw. Because that's what you want to be, is you want to be a quarterback. Because it ain't changing. It's like AI. It's coming. It's going to keep coming. Quarterback's going to continue to dominate this game. It's how the rules dictate it. All right, I'm Nick Ashew on The Fan. One thing we know is that Fernando Mendoza is going to go number one overall in the draft. Right? There's no debate. There's no nothing. What we don't know is whether or not Fernando Mendoza is actually a robot. Every time I hear an interview with this guy, somebody said this one time, it sounds like ChatGPT wrote his responses. I can't unhear it now. But one response that's smart is being really excited about having Tom Brady as a mentor, if that's the case. Like, you can kind of just say it like we all know it's going to happen. We all see it. We all see it. We know he's going to the Raiders. But situation dictates the success of young quarterbacks so much, right? Like, this is why, again, sometimes falling in the draft can be a blessing for a quarterback. You go to a better organization, you have a better chance to succeed. It's a story as old as the NFL. This happens year after year after year. But if we're really being honest with ourselves, for all of the dysfunction and all of the mess that the Raiders have been over the years, Tom Brady does kind of at least make the Raiders a notch better, right? Because if you have him in the organization and you can utilize his brain power and his experience, whether it's Clint Kubiak, the new head coach, who said he's going to lean on Tom Brady, call him a lot, get advice from him, smart, no reason not to. Also, technically, he's your boss now because he's a part owner of the Raiders. And if you're Fernando Mendoza, same thing. Look, Tom Brady knows the spotlight's on him. He knows that it's polarizing that he's a part owner of the Raiders. He knows the controversy of him being an owner in some ways and also a broadcaster and what people have said about that. And if he can show that even if it's a tiny part, he can have a level of added success, he can bring something to the table that helps make the Raiders better, that's a big part of his post-playing legacy. The quarterback legacy set, greatest quarterback of all time. 7 Super Bowls, I mean, it's done. Like, we know that that's the case. But there's the after you play as a legend, what does your career look like legacy? That does matter, too. Because just because you retire from playing a sport doesn't mean that you retire from being competitive. And we all know how it went post-playing career for Michael Jordan, right? Not a good, I mean, just could not identify talent in the draft in any capacity. Not a great leader when he played for the Wizards because he just basically broke Kwame Brown. Now, I don't know whether Kwame Brown would have been a great player or not anyway, but Michael Jordan yelling at him at 19 years old didn't help.
I think, didn't Jordan say that he was upset that he could not palm the ball and he would never would have wanted him drafted if he knew that his hands were big enough to palm the ball?
Yes, he had small hands.
Yeah.
Small hands, Metal Chris. Yeah. Go back and look at the track record of Michael Jordan and the draft picks he's had here and in Charlotte. It's bad. I mean, sometimes you can be so good at something that you just can't articulate to other people how to also be good at it.
Because Wayne Gretzky, terrible coach also.
Yes, right? And that's really, like, honestly, it's one of those things where you're a prisoner of your genius. Honestly, Michael Jordan just can't teach other people because it comes naturally to him. And there are some, it might be that way with Tom Brady. Now, I don't know yet. I think he's gotten much better as a broadcaster. He's worked on it. He's got a work ethic. Seems like he's a pretty good mentor and leader, maybe. I don't know him personally, but there's a chance. So if he works with Fernando Mendoza and actually helps coach him, actually helps give him that opportunity to grow and get better, then maybe it does help at least a little bit with what you've got going on with the Raiders. And it becomes less of a dysfunctional mess. Listen, when you have the quarterback position figured out, it masks a lot of your problems. Because for all of the dysfunctional stories that are out there of the Jets and the Browns and the Cardinals and insert team here, you know who used to be a part of that conversation that really isn't mentioned that way anymore is the Bengals. Now, even with Joe Burrow getting hurt consistently, it's been more about that, but it hasn't been about them being a cheap, dysfunctional franchise. Now, when the report cards come out, that's a different thing, and we know. But really, Joe Burrow over the years has masked the deficiencies of the Bengals organization and the cheapness of ownership, too. Now, it helps a little bit when you pay a couple of wide receivers. They weren't cheap there. But when you have great quarterback play, it hides it. One could argue that could happen up in Buffalo soon, too, right? I mean, Sean McDermott now leaves. You see that press conference that just kind of lingers with everybody now between ownership and Brandon Bean, the GM who gets promoted after building a roster that Sean McDermott complains about, then gets fired. And we're like, oh, we got something going on behind the scenes here. But Josh Allen's such a great quarterback. He's masked so many of the deficiencies just in that roster alone up in Buffalo. And you could argue Joe Burrow did the same thing before they really had T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase develop the way that they did. Although Ja'Marr Chase was really great right off the bat. But you know what I mean? Like, you, when you have a great quarterback, it becomes the spotlight, and it's less about everything else going on within the organization because quarterbacks mask so many of the problems. They hide it. They pick up the slack for areas of whether it's the offensive line, whether it's wide receiver, or your defense is really bad and you just have a quarterback that can bring you back in games. I mean, there's a chance that that ends up being the case for the Raiders, and Tom Brady's a big part of that. So, you know, if Tom Brady wasn't an owner there, honestly, I'd look around and say, is Fernando Mendoza really somebody that, you know, is that a place where he's going to develop into being a great quarterback? Is that really going to help him? Now, you can also make the argument, how much is Tom Brady going to be around? He's got a lot of other things he's doing. He's going to be broadcasting too during the season, so how much is he around the team? That's a question we don't have an answer to. But he's at least involved. Like, he's going to be invested in Fernando Mendoza's development, because he is an owner of the team, and, oh, by the way, he wins when that team wins, financially. So, you know, a quarterback having success, the team having success on the field, we've seen how valuable franchises are in the NFL and how quickly that spikes, too. Commanders got sold for, what, $6 billion? They're worth $8 already after a couple of years? Doesn't take much. Doesn't take much. So, whatever Fernando Mendoza does in his career, there will be ties, fair or not, to Tom Brady being a part of it. Now, he's not a coach. right? He's an owner. But when you're in that organization, no matter what, the pressure and the expectation is now going to be, okay, got to help this kid develop now, right? I would argue that Fernando Mendoza shouldn't even start right away. I mean, why? Why? There's a, I mean, hopefully they go with Geno Smith. Really, I just don't, you don't need to throw these guys out there right away. This whole organization's in flux. Max Crosby might get traded. He doesn't want to be there. You got a rookie head coach. Do you need to start Fernando Mendoza? Wait halfway through the season at least. I mean, there's no reason not to. That's what I would do. But again, a lot of these teams in the NFL want to rush their guys out right away and have all this hype and get them. I mean, Fernando Mendoza has the intangibles to be a great quarterback. A lot of scouts, a lot of draft analysts certainly look at him and see the pieces that are there, but that doesn't mean anything if you can't put the rest of it together around him still. There's only so much you can do. So it doesn't mean that if we don't see a good Fernando Mendoza when he's first out there starting, whenever that is, that it's a guarantee that he's going to be a bust. But you do tend to know relatively quickly whether a quarterback's got any chance at all or not. I'm sorry, I just don't think Anthony Richardson has any shot at this point, but he barely had an experience in college or high school. It's tough, right? Zach Wilson, we know he's a backup. Like, that's just how it's going to be in the NFL. We'll know kind of early whether Fernando Mendoza has a shot. It doesn't guarantee either direction, but you can pretty much tell, like, oh, there is no way this is going to happen, or he's at least going to develop as time goes on. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan.
No. Just do one thing for me. Get Mendoza.
Mendoza!